Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Friday morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber, along with Jim Cramer. Carl's on assignment this morning. Let's give you a look at futures as we head into what is the final trading session for the week. Looks like we're going to have a slightly higher open. Yeah, exactly. Can't really tell much these days given the volatility. Let's get to our roadmap this morning, though. It does start with the softening retail engagement. And that leads us to shares of Robinhood, which will be sharply lower this after a key analyst downgrade. We're going to talk about that. Also, what would a day be without talking about Elon Musk? Tesla's Texas bash. Musk promising the Cybertruck next year and that the company will see scale that, quote, no company has ever achieved. And finally, some macro talk as well. Inflation, is it fueling a corporate ad market slowdown? Got some details there for you, Jim.
Good, because I don't have that.
Yeah, you saw some of the names yesterday. Let's start, sort of take a little different tack here. Start with some research. Start with Goldman Sachs and that downgrade of Robinhood to sell. They were the underwriter, I believe, as well, way back when this company came public. Yes. Not that far back, really. I kid. What are your thoughts about this? You've been focused on this name for quite some time. You've had a variety of different pieces of advice, for the company through time.
Obviously, I followed it when it was private and, 22 million people app. Really very exciting. David, this piece is devastating because it basically says, no, they're nowhere near making their numbers. There's no real valuation that they can prop up on. Unlikely to reach profitability in 2023. That's not this year. That's next year. So you're talking about maybe a 2024 story. It seems like that people aren't, they kind of found the market. They enjoyed it for a while, and now they're.
Well, when you have adjusted EBITDA margins of 2%, that was last year, and you do guide to as much as 15 to 20% growth in adjusted expenses, it's not easy.
No. And, the company's going quiet. They used to be very boisterous, telling you about how many young people liked it and went in and got excited. And then I used to argue with them, listen, a lot of your guys are doing options, and you're going to get crushed if the market ever goes down. Of course, they refuted that, but numbers, you are what your record says you are. And user growth has remained depressed. Upload, download, it's cool. So, David, I'm not saying this is an FITP, flash in the pan. I am saying that the joy with which younger people approach the market, particularly the options market, that may be a thing of the past.
But I'm not, why is any of this a real surprise? Because despite its popularity as a trading platform, I don't know that there was ever a great deal of consensus on its ability to actually make a lot of money.
You're right. You're right. I mean, I remember when it came public and there was tremendous enthusiasm in the 30s and it went up and then it's really just crashed, basically. And I think a lot of what happened is people who liked the name, this is one of the things that happened, whether it be an Allbirds or whether it be a Traeger or a Weber, people were buying the stocks of companies they liked.
Right.
Rent the Runway.
Okay, the old Peter Lynch approach.
Yeah, but they didn't look whether. Remember Peter Lynch? You were supposed to start there.
Right.
You weren't supposed to end there. Like the wife likes the Hanes with the eggs, so then he pulls the file.
Then do your
but
work.
But they never pulled the file.
Right.
As a matter of fact, they don't even know what that means. Now, I don't want to denigrate. A lot of these guys were just options traders, and when the market was good. Like, I remember when Dave Portnoy, when he was, like, picking names out, and they were all working.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was that was emblematic of an era. And now what's a shame is that that was not the way Robinhood started. Robinhood started with people saying, you know what, I'm very interested in seeing, maybe GE here at six. They like the single-digit stocks, but they kind of lost their way. They don't really offer you. Do you get the snacks, their little memos?
I don't, but I do wonder whether
they're very
still,
good. They're like a high school production, which is excellent, because I used to go a lot. I was in my high school production. I was in Guys and Dolls. You know, it's kind of that level.
Hey, you were dressed for it the other day, but not today.
Okay, but I was also, I did not get into Brigadoon. I was cut. Mm. But their high school production thing that they put out is very enjoyable. It's called The Snacks or something, and it's usually about 2 days old.
Right.
It's very good. It's very good.
But you know,
it's
the
like Robin Hood himself, remember?
We move on,
in tights.
The long
term. It's Robin Hood in tights.
Oh, yeah, Mel Brooks.
There's nothing wrong with
it. By the way, great book. His book, All About Me. Really? Yeah, great. Really good read.
How's Carl Reiner looking at the book? How's it?
Yeah, of course. He loves Carl Reiner.
No, I'm not joking around. I mean, this
is what about
like,
the franchise value overall? Despite the inability to get to profitability and or at least at the point where investors thought that they are still amassing a base of clients who are going to be of value.
Well, they're not
at some
amassing
point.
A base of clients anymore.
They're not.
No, it's okay. Not going up.
Well, that would
As a matter
be a
of fact, the daily average numbers versus Schwab, there's a very good example, Exhibit 19 of the people versus Robin Hood.
Yes.
Does talk about how the decrease versus Schwab. In Exhibit 20, 35% of Robin Hood's customers had subprime credit. Now it's probably worse. Subprime credit, and they're in credit, and they're in options, and they're borrowing.
Right.
Now, to Robin Hood's credit.
That's he's got nothing. All right, let's go from Robin Hood.
That was not a positive thing, because if you're on the podcast, you might have thought it cut out.
Yeah.
You know, because remember, you always do that thing for the podcast after we do the Mad Dash?
I know.
So what people are thinking, they blipped it. They're thinking I said curse words.
What would you rather talk, Tesla or Peter Thiel? And crypto.
Well, I like a positive story. I like Tesla.
You do?
Well, I mean, Tesla gets you really good numbers. That's why everyone uses it.
All right. I say we do Tesla as well.
Right.
I'm
going to
overrule our producers, because basically we can do that, because we're sitting here at the desk. Although we do want to talk about Peter Thiel and those incendiary comments
I thought were over the top.
But as for Elon Musk, I mean, what would a week be? What would a day be without mentioning Mr. Musk? This time not in relation to Twitter, but more because of that cyber rodeo they had last night.
What's he substantive?
He spoke at a grand opening event for the company's $1.1 billion factory near the Austin Airport in Texas. He said Tesla aims to produce 500,000 Model Y vehicles at that factory. It's going to also start Cybertruck production next year. And he talked about the importance of scale.
This is why scale matters. In order to make a real difference, a really big difference to sustainability, we have to make a lot of cars, we have to make a lot of stationary packs to transition the world to sustainable technology as quickly as possible.
It's quite a look he's got working there.
He's Henry Ford without the protocols of Zion.
You know, something that we don't talk about as often, that's nice to hear, by the way, as well, something we don't talk about as often is the hours for a electric vehicle of production versus Volkswagen, for example. I think Volkswagen, I've read this in print, Volkswagen CEO talked about it takes us 30 hours. It takes him 10 for one vehicle. The efficiency, electric vehicles
amazing.
Are obviously less intensive. They have robots making them all, right? They got the factory.
He's got it down.
But that's, you know, very important in their ability to obviously continue to scale. They're talking about what is a million.
Cars.
I know, 2 million cars, a million and a half this year, perhaps, or more in terms of sales, coming out of a quarter where they sold about 310,000, despite what were supply chain issues.
China shut down, and he still made the numbers.
Yeah.
How does he do that?
I don't know.
I mean, like Mao would have been so proud, but not she, because everything's by China, including their lousy vaccines that don't work.
To that point, it is worth also mentioning
that Pfizer continues
to add even more strain to the global economy right now. That shutdown in Shanghai, the Journal reporting this morning on not just Tesla, which has been the factory there has been closed since, I believe, March 28th, but Apple. And the complexity of the supply chain, which we've all learned so much about over these last few years, even prior to the pandemic, really, when we were in the and continue to be in something of a trade war. But, Jim, you know, things get stuck. Things are required to be manufactured partially there and then go somewhere else. There's not a lot going on right now in the factories in Shanghai or that region, even though the port is open.
I mean, I know he's president for life, but there is a bit of an election in November. I mean, they actually try to, they get together and supposed to just ratify Xi.
Right.
Well, he better get it together. And what he has to do is either get our vaccines or accept the fact that people over 50 can get sick. He cannot shut down. We could not shut down our country for 5 weeks without Southern governors declaring
secession. Zero COVID policy doesn't seem to be one that's working very well. They have 20,000 now a day in Shanghai, obviously. Well, it's a city of 18 million people.
They're unrealistic. Dr. Gottlieb was talking about a huge number of people over 50 who've not been vaccinated. We have a vaccination that is about as efficient as our flu vaccine. And China's all-powerful? They're as all-powerful as Russia turned out to be. They're only all-powerful in the minds of the mainstream media.
They have a much more powerful economy than do the Russians. I think we can all agree on that.
Russia's got the economy of Italy, which would be without the incredible Armani jackets that you have.
Yeah.
It's a great look.
Thank you.
I'd lose the sweater, obviously. That's...
Yeah, I may actually get rid of the sweater even during the course of the show, but then I got the dark shirt on and was going
to
say...
And that would look really cool. Let's go back to Italy.
For Dave.
Italy, Texas versus Russia. Now, Russia...
Let's go back, actually. Are you familiar
with the Battle of Kursk?
Oh, my God. Do we really have to discuss Russian history again?
Well, because the Ukrainians are calling for tanks...
Yes.
...to go against Russia, which they're finally going to... Russia does know how to fight in an open plane war with tanks because they actually defeated the Germans. So, I mean, that's the nightmare for if Ukraine gets to a tank war with Russia, Russia wins. But they obviously are not winning. They won't win in Kharkov, but 100 miles from Kharkov, it was a great Russian victory. And Kharkov was the greatest Russian defeat in World War II. So we're replaying that because Putin cares tremendously about history.
World War II is 80 years ago.
Putin cares about the great patriotic war.
The Russian army that you keep referring to from then is the same one as now.
They have tanks.
All right. We're going to get to a lot more here, including talking a lot more about stocks this morning. We'll get to those Peter Thiel comments as well, as he referred to Warren Buffett. Not particularly nice terms.
I don't think
a couple of other, as he called them, New York bankers as well. Let's give you a look at futures this morning. As you see, we're coming off a little bit there on the Dow. We'll see. It's been a down week so far. More squawk on the street, though, straight ahead.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You didn't play it. You played it, and then you didn't play it. Come on.
Is it a Faber report?
Yeah,
I didn't hear Johnny.
I know. I want to talk about, you may have noticed this yesterday, and in fact, you had an interview with the CEO as well of ConAgra, Jim. There was unexpected weakness, I think, in some of the old, let's call them, media companies that are still reliant to a large extent on broadcast advertising. And in part, some of that weakness may actually have come from ConAgra. Just one line in the press release yesterday in which they said their advertising and promotion for the quarter decreased 11.5% to $65 million. J.P. Morgan came out with a note saying they expect another step down in the fourth quarter of 2022 versus a year ago, and then perhaps a step up in that kind of spending. It may have been specific to ConAgra, and I know you had a long-range discussion.
They had bad gross margins they were trying to make. Gross margins as they can. Now, they do own certain aisles in the supermarket. They're doing a good job. But they were trying very hard to not get crushed by inflation. The idea of where they're getting their customers is hard for me because it's not a direct-to-consumer story. It's more of a millennial story now.
Right.
But that's very interesting that they...
Yeah. You know, and again, these are always concerns. My understanding is that the ad market is still growing, perhaps mid-single digits here in the U.S. For the, you know, versus stronger growth in other markets. The comparisons may be more difficult year over year as they are for so many different parts of business right now. But it signaled a concern, and you saw the weakness, whether it was Disney, whether it was our parent company, Comcast,
right.
which was not down on concerns about cable,
no,
but
right.
actually about NBC Universal, the,
Look, the
part of the company
going,
we're with, Paramount, Discovery, Scripps even.
Although Bob Bakish might, he's come up with other ways to make money.
But, yeah, well, the focus
for so many.
But I think
he may disagree with that, particularly on the weekend of the Masters.
Yeah, so much of the focus is on direct to consumer.
But
the fact
say,
is the ad business is still an important one for many
right,
of these
can
companies.
Can I just say that the Google return on investment case is perhaps the greatest I've ever seen in advertising. And if you don't put money with them, I think you're just, where's Ruth Porat? She talked about this. They will give you a report exactly of where your people are buying and what they're doing. And you just throw money at them and you get more money back. It is the most insane positive return on investment I've ever seen in all the businesses I've run.
Which
other than
is
hotels
that
tonight.
Even if there is a slowdown in traditional broadcast ads, you don't believe that Alphabet will see any diminution at all.
No, the money's going their way. It's just, it's so spectacular. And by the way, the reports that they give you.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel, you know, advertising, it's like, well, 50, you know, half of it works. We just, we don't know which half. Google, 100% of it works. I know exactly what it works.
And that goes to why their numbers are multiples of all the ad spending for all these companies.
It's not nighttime saturation. It's daylight precision.
Right. I did want to also use this as an opportunity to talk about Discovery in particular, because this is the last day that AT&T and Discovery
okay.
will trade, let's call it separately, in the sense of the deal gets done after the close tonight. And want to remind people what we're talking about here. Warner Discovery will begin trading on Monday as an independent company. We'll have 2.4 billion shares outstanding. Remember, 1.7 billion shares roughly are being distributed to current AT&T shareholders. And one of the key questions is how many of those shares will be immediately sold. And, you know, any number of people are trying to figure that out. There's, Jim, you know, index fund to index fund, you may have some that have to sell, but then you'll have others that have to buy.
Bye.
So it cancels itself out. There are income funds that own about 200 million shares. Over time, they would be expected to sell Discovery.
Right.
It's not an income play, as AT&T might still be. There's 70 million shares short. There also, though, are...
Those could be short versus getting stock.
Right.
We
They'll be getting
sure.
stock
they're
off from...
They're not betting against...
Well, no, they're shares short, and then there are 70 million that are actually setting up the ARB so that they will get...
additional shares short betting
right.
against Dave Zavala doing a good
I
job.
I don't know. Yes, there are some, but or betting on that this will pressure the stock, this so-called flowback that we talked about. But the most important is the retail investors of AT&T. As many as half of the 1.7 billion shares being distributed will go to retail accounts, and the question remains very much unclear. How many of them will be sold quickly? How many of them will be kept? And that gets to this concern again about how much stock is going to come back to the market before you sort of settle out here. But Discovery, 2.4 billion shares outstanding.
Well,
obviously, the enterprise value far larger than the market value, given it's only a $23 stock. And I did note yesterday, and this is the key, it's like the first 100 days for Zaslav are going to be very important. And this is the partially some of the key here, Jim, is what he's going to do. And I did notice from the announcement yesterday of their future leadership team, this one sentence, which I thought was interesting. The new leadership team draws on a diverse set of leaders from both organizations, provides continuity, and creates a flatter organizational structure to drive creativity, accountability, and collaboration. You don't often see that, accountability
in
that way.
Meaning if you don't make the number, someone's fired.
And meaning, perhaps, that there's a real opportunity here in terms of taking this asset on from AT&T.
Well, it doesn't
a lot of the layering that was there, de-layering it, less clutter.
Really...
Maybe it was more bloated. We'll see.
Well, look, it could be like when I worked at Fox, there was Roger Ailes, and then there was you. And then there was no one else other than the makeup people.
There you go. All right.
By the way, if you ever
on
said
Monday,
bad,
when we
I
come
fired
in,
fired you. Which I
yeah.
liked. I liked it.
That was the least of it. Up next, it's Jim's Mad Dash. We'll also count you down to the opening bell. Got a lot more Squawk on the Street for you when we come back.
Picture this. You're on a John Deere compact tractor, enjoying the sun as you clear brush across your pasture. You just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
The only person who's allowed to wear jeans to the stock exchange here?
No, they changed the rules just for us. Yeah.
Just for the day.
They took the sign down.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, the sign is no longer at the door.
Did not know that.
So, yeah.
May come in jeans tomorrow.
That's right.
I've been doing that for a while.
Chip had a good quarter, but nobody cared. Apparel's doing quite badly. Even Macy's, which I think is having a decent quarter, is going down. VF Corp is doing very poorly as a stock. Ralph Lauren's doing very well as a stock.
But, right.
I'm sorry.
Let's get to your
I'm sorry.
We're just having a little fun.
I'm out of line with that.
He gives me a hard time about wearing
jeans. All right, so get this. One of the most important analysts, by the way, whose work I've loved for 3 decades, is a guy named Ken Hoexter.
Yeah.
Okay, he's at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Today, he does what I've been waiting for. He downgrades the transports. He downgrades Union Pacific, which has been one of the greats, okay? And also has Powder River Coal, and everybody, you know, coal's going higher in price. He downgrades Schneider. He downgrades Canpac. He downgrades UPS, which has fallen from 230 to 190. David, this is it, okay? This is the end of the cycle.
Jim, we talked about this, I think, on Monday.
Well, because I got
that
it from
note, and then you talked about it.
Leo
Ron. Had the Leo Ron on from Uber Freight.
Yes, which has got the biggest, best look. Spot rates.
And it's not like the market hasn't sort of been sniffing something out.
Well, but, you know, David, the stock was at 190 not that long ago. I would say people have to understand what's happening here. Everyone's got, they added more trucks, they added more trains, they got it everything because things were going up, 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 up. And you know what, David? At the peak, everybody's got all the trucks you need and all the trains you need, but they don't have the cargo because there isn't as much demand. We are at the peak. Congratulations to Jay Powell. Round one goes to him.
Because he's engineering
a soft landing.
You think it's soft?
Well, look, I could say it's going to be a hard landing. No one's going to ever remember
Meanwhile,
those.
Well, what do you do with these stocks? And it's not just Union Pacific, obviously. It's UPS, it's FedEx, of the big names. It's
well,
so many of the
United Parcel
companies.
Has just fallen to where it yields more than 3. It's 220 down to 190. Union Pacific still has some room to go down. FedEx is got this great European initiative that could help unless Russia, Ukraine just gets worse. Union Pacific, unfortunately, has to be sold.
It does.
Yeah.
All right.
Norfolk Southern has to be sold. They have some good coal. They're all good companies, but they've all had a big run, and Ken Hoexter's not going to. Ken Hoexter's it. He's the man. Okay? It's good to have the axe. Remember the axe? I don't want it buried in my head, sell Union Pacific, even though I love Lance Fritz.
The analyst that we're referring to who turned around on the
set. Yeah, but the podcast, dude.
All right. Yeah, we are. We're a podcast, too. That's true. In fact, we want you to always remember that as we get close to an opening bell here. You can catch us anytime, anywhere. Listen to and follow the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast. We're back after this. Welcome back. Less than a minute to go before we get started with final trading session of the week. Haven't gotten to oil yet. Obviously, very important in the overall move in the markets.
I need your help.
My help?
You know, Shell had to shut down Russia.
Yes, they are... shuttering their operations.
They offloaded great Permian assets to Conoco,
right,
in order to be able to reduce their carbon footprint. Is their carbon footprint in the eyes of the governments that they are regulated by now taken down by the fact that they don't have Russia?
I would assume it might be, yes.
Then they have to buy American Permian assets back or buy Permian assets, period.
Why do you believe that?
Because they have no growth. Without Russia, they need growth. And they don't have to worry about ESG if they've lost a lot of carbon assets. So what I'm saying is there could be a wave of M&A in oil from BP and from Royal Gulch.
I don't know, Jim.
BP's first got to weather whatever the write-down's going to be on the Gazprom
asset.
David,
what happens to BP?
I don't know.
Well, no, I don't know. It's like, that's like not that, that's not like not the most great. Could you give me a little something here?
I'll try. Let me quickly do what we got to do here, which is you just heard the opening bell. You saw the real-time exchange here at the big board, by the way. That was footwear retailer designer brand celebrating its 30th anniversary over at the NASDAQ. The Parkinson's Foundation, marking Parkinson's Awareness Month. All right, let's get back to it. What's your focus on BP? What are your thoughts?
Well,
I thought you actually said that it might be time to buy that
stuff.
Well,
no, I think when BP does it, when they announce it.
The write-down.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wait for that. But BP does have good assets. I just think that what I'm talking about is more the M&A side, that if you were really worried about, if Royal Dutch was worried about bumping up against carbon rules, they now don't have to worry. So they can buy something. Now, well, I don't know whether our regulators...
You know, there's different ways to approach it. I mean, Shell, listen, you buy Permian, you're taking stuff out of the ground that then eventually gets... Well, that produces a lot of carbon.
Stupid. They sold Permian at a low.
I know,
now they
but
gotta buy it back.
The whole idea, and some of the European companies are embracing what is a different strategy than perhaps some of our domestics, which is to actually embrace renewables in the sense of making them a part of their portfolio.
Right, that's like what Enbridge did.
Wind and solar being the two key ones, whereas you know, a company like ExxonMobil is said, no, that's not our core competency. We're not interested in that.
No,
so
look, I think
there are different strategies.
Look, I think it's jump ball. I'm trying to figure out what they're all going to do, and I think that because of your
don't
knowledge
necessarily
of Exxon,
see the Europeans actually buying more assets that involve getting.
Okay,
you got to leave a lot in the ground if you're going to get anywhere near
the
carbon targets
go,
that are out there.
Do
reduction
batteries
targets.
Like that great piece today by Jonas about what battery companies are doing well. Did you see that the UK is embracing nuclear?
Yes, I did.
And what'd you think of that?
I think that makes a lot of sense, don't you?
Well, at what point do you decide I'm going to look at open the file on GE? There's two Canadian nukes coming on. The UK wants to go nuke. It might be happening.
I mean, you know, what's the timeline for building one of these new
plants? It's not really clear how quickly they can put up the small form factors, they call it. I have to do more work on that rather than cuff it.
But it is interesting, and you note that, of course, there's so much discussion about the so-called energy transition, and then particularly in light of Russia's war against Ukraine and what that has meant for global supplies of oil and natural gas, in particular for Europe. But the lack of commitment to nuclear in the world and the fact that now people are rediscovering, or at least there's a lot of discussion about it.
Right.
Meanwhile, France has just always continued to be a nuclear-powered country.
French engineers
in this country as a result
French
of Three Mile Island.
Artillery.
1976.
Right.
I mean, how many have we decommissioned, you know? And how many new nuclear power plants have been built in the last 10 years?
We've extended their lives, but we were, ever since Three Mile Island and the problems at Southern, with giant overruns, nuclear is not a favor here. But GE.
Why isn't it though? It's clean. I understand.
Because of Fukushima, because of Three Mile Island, because
or
of Chernobyl.
There is obviously nuclear waste, but it would appear that there are ways to deal with that effectively.
Absolutely, but I'm just giving you the what happened. Fukushima was a very important event in the lifestyle of nuke.
Although Japan now is, public opinion there is changing too.
Well, because everyone's hostage to terrible fuels. By the way, I mean, what, we sent $38 billion, the EU, so far to Russia since the war began?
I'm sorry, we did
$38 billion dollars to buy the natural gas. So EU is sending them $38 billion they can finance the war against
Ukraine.
They
still have yet to, that it has not yet gotten to the point where they're willing to, and they can't. No. I mean, their economy will shut down in Europe if they truly just stop all
imports. But I think people should know that when we up these sanctions, they're meager versus how much the EU is paying Russia for nat gas. Our sanctions are almost meaningless versus what the Russians get from Europe. But no one talks about that. You think, like, President Biden's going to say something?
Well, he's trying to figure out a way, or we're trying to figure out a way to get more natural gas to Europe over time.
Yeah, that's good. Those plants take only 3 years.
Yeah.
Tellurian's ready in 2026.
I mean, right. You got Cheniere. You've got the private company Freeport, Freeport, McMurrin, Freeport. And building a train, so to speak, it takes a long time. These are multi-billion-dollar projects to actually allow for the export of LNG.
Meanwhile, the sell-off in the NASDAQ continues as if nothing's happening.
And what does that make you think, Jim?
Well, I think that we should go to HP.
That's it? It makes you think we should go to HP?
No, I'm using that as an analog. HP sales are awful on the low end.
Right.
And I like Enrique Lores very much, but Warren Buffett bought 11% of it, and now the analysts are starting to downgrade it to feel you got a chance to get out of it because they're actually looking at the numbers. Warren Buffett's looking at the cash flow. The cash flow's phenomenal. So... David, this is a way to get, it's a segue to Peter Thiel from saying, will you grab it?
I know, I knew you were, and I'm kind of reluctant in some ways.
All right.
You use such incendiary language, but it is a story that, you know, a lot of people are following. Peter Thiel, at that Bitcoin conference, we were covering it closely yesterday in Miami.
The new bull down there, they unveiled the new bull.
Presented a slideshow, and obviously did include criticisms of a lot of different financial opinion leaders who he claims are trying to stop the growth of cryptocurrency. Take a listen.
Enemy number one. I think he's sort of... I think the sort of the sociopathic grandpa from Omaha is perhaps the most honest and the most direct in it. When they choose not to allocate to Bitcoin, that is a deeply political choice, and we need to be pushing back on them. We need to say, you have to get on board on this.
It's interesting because it does also raise something you were actually talking with the Squawk Box folks about, sort of this idea of woke, because he's using it a lot. And he's, you know, people on the right using a lot, woke corporations, sort of lumping it all in there. But also, I'm not sure, his criticism may be perfectly valid.
But
there is a generational gap to a certain extent in the willingness to embrace Bitcoin and the other digital currencies. But his language is kind of incendiary. I'm not sure it was necessary.
I thought it was disconcerting because Warren Buffett deserves respect. And he may disagree with Peter Thiel, but he's not a tyrant by any means. He's never said that you have to do what he says. As a matter of fact, he's quite open in the letter saying, listen, you don't have to do what I say. So that seemed to be almost like the mentions that I have in Twitter. I mean, it just seemed very unfair.
Yeah.
I used to have Peter Thiel on when I was with you doing this just to annoy you with Larry Kudlow for Kudlow and Kramer. And you know, Peter Thiel's an excellent thinker. He really is.
He was, although I'll tell you, we used to have him on years ago on the old Squawk Box. I remember him on with me and Mark and Joe. He wasn't a great hedge fund manager.
No, but he's a visionary.
He's been a great investor as a venture investor, obviously made an enormous amount
of
money.
But you get in front of crowds like that.
Didn't run a hedge fund very well.
And you get excited and you get overly exuberant. Now, I don't know if he's going to apologize. I just feel that...
That was all set up. He had a slide. It's not like that was in the moment.
Okay, you know, it's a rally. I mean, you know, people say before a rally, before Army versus Navy, they don't have anything good to say about Navy before the game. Look, I'm not justifying. I think it's wrong. But yeah. 99% of our viewers
We can have the conversation without necessarily calling people
psychopathic?
Sociopathic.
Sociopathic. You know, sociopathic, that's a
New
negative
York
term.
Bankers, which we all know what that's code for. All right, let's move on, Jim. You mentioned the weakness in the NASDAQ overall. There continues to be concern every day. I've talked about sort of the whiplash. Yesterday it was seemingly, well, don't worry too much about the consumer. Then I had a lunch with a number of investors yesterday who seemed very concerned about the consumer and said, everything you're looking at is backward looking. You got to think more forward. Despite what we've seen from Chip Berg on the call with Levi's saying, I don't have my head in the sand, despite what you've seen from a number of the CEOs you've had join you on Mad Money this week.
Corey Barry, who has an excellent daily rap and also has a visionary rap about Best Buy. I disagree. I'm going to bridle at what they're saying. Guys and gals, Best Buy's at 9x earnings with a 4% yield. What, you're like revelatory? What's it like revelatory? The consumer Toll Brothers at 5x. Wow, you know what? Maybe Toll is not going to do that. I mean, come on. Stop being as stupid as you are. These stocks have reflected that view for ages. Once we get mortgage rates to 6 and the number of cuts happens in Toll, you have to buy Toll. So these people are fighting the last war. They think that the market hasn't noticed that. Hello? The market hasn't noticed that? I mean, HP would be dramatically lower if it weren't for the sociopath. How could he have said that about Warren Buffett? That was, like, horrible. But I'm just saying that look at Macy's. Okay, Macy's is at 5x earnings, right? It has a lot of optionality. It happens to have an absolutely terrific CEO. It's not revelatory that people think that business is going to get very bad. It's not.
So your point is simply this has already been reflected to a certain extent.
Well, it's like, you know, wow,
prices,
they're really worried. They're really
about
worried
the
about the consumer. Well, Macy's is at 4x earnings. Do you think that the people who own that stock are not worried about it? People have been blowing out of that stock. The short position goes up every day. Oh, you know what? I'm worried about the consumer. Well, guys, the time to worry was a year ago. I'm embarrassed by them. Not as bad as, like, Peter Thiel should recant those very...
You won't.
Ill-advised comments.
That's his M.O.
David, what do you think about CVS?
CVS.
Charlie Victor.
What do I think about it?
Yeah, I have a theory.
I mean, I still am waiting for them to unlock the ice cream sandwiches at my local CVS.
Really, how about the Gillette razor?
I want them. It's 9 o'clock.
Okay, can I give you, you a...
Know, I need my
positive,
sugar.
Positive.
I'm knocking on the darn cabinet, and it's
locked.
Well,
never
locked.
Mind. I was just going
to... What am I supposed to do? I want my Haagen-Dazs.
No,
I can't
just
get it.
We are now embracing what will soon be a regimen that you have to have a shot every 4 months. Omicron counts as a shot. So that means you're going to return to CVS, and it could get a second wave, and Aetna could get a second wave. So stay there. And while I have you, I just want to say, apropos of the wrong things, I want to say the right thing. There's a company that's hit a 52-week all-time high today named Centene, and that's not what's important.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Neidorff passed away.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the most charitable, visionary people in the world. He gave a lot of people more. He took advantage of Obamacare to give a lot of people health care. He ran a company splendidly, and he was a great man.
Yeah, passed away at the age of 79 after a long illness, and I know you were a big supporter of his.
On every quarter.
Had him on all the time.
I just don't. Sometimes there are people, I mean, when they had problems, race problems in St. Louis, he's the first to be able to rush to it, try to help. And I can't believe he's not alive. I just can't believe it.
Our condolences.
To his family, who lost his daughter.
To Mr. Neardorff's family.
He's just a really great guy. I talked to him quite a bit off camera.
Yeah.
About what has to happen in our country. And I'm going to just put it out there. He said, had the Republicans allowed price adjustments for areas that the major HMOs would not write insurance, then many millions of people would be covered. But they wanted to, this is Michael Neidorff, they wanted Affordable Care Act to fail because it was keystone to their campaign. And he thought that that was almost criminal. It's criminal. He's a good man.
Always hard to move on, so to
I
speak.
I have to say, I just, from my staff knew.
I know. You were
And when he lost
very
his daughter,
appreciative, Mr. Neidorff.
It's just a sad time.
I do want to end, though, Jim, just on some other news. We followed, obviously, JetBlue and Spirit. JetBlue is going to have an opportunity, at least, to present to Spirit's board of directors and tell them why it should be allowed to potentially be considered and or why its bid is better than the deal it already has underway with Frontier.
Okay, well, tell me, why doesn't Leena Khan...
It's the DOJ that would rule on this.
Oh, my gosh.
Not
Jonathan Cantor?
Yes.
Oh, then forget
right.
it.
DOJ does airlines.
It's over.
You and I have made the point. There seems to be a great, I have to say, there's consensus here, perhaps not shared in the JetBlue boardroom, that no, it's not going to happen.
Jonathan
You're going to get challenged if you try to buy it.
Antitrust department.
But you know what? This gives JetBlue an opportunity, and we heard from the CEO the other day, to make its case to the board of Spirit and say why, in fact, and what it's willing to do, perhaps, to help mitigate some of the concerns it may have about an antitrust problem.
There's no that, way
that union
matter.
Would bring. But you're right. Many people just defaulting to no way.
You know, look, no way. This guy is a total heavyweight from Paul Weiss. Everyone knew he's a heavyweight.
Talking
By the
about
way, he's very pro-corporate.
Competition.
But
right, the head
he's
of,
in there to stop competition.
Head of antitrust.
To create competition.
DOJ, yeah. Who
if anything, he wants to break up the mergers that occurred under Obama.
That's not easy.
No, I'm just saying.
Not
I'm just
easy.
Putting. Now, David, who are the lawyers involved? Do you know?
No, I don't. I haven't looked.
We should.
I know. I should.
Because they're going to make a lot of money for nothing.
You're right. Goldman Sachs is JetBlue's legal. Sherman and Sterling is JetBlue's
Sherman
legal
Sterling,
advisor.
Good. It sounds like the real, you know, well,
you
whatever.
Go.
I don't
Sherman
want to denigrate anybody.
Is their legal advisor.
How about the equity capital markets? See that piece saying that don't even bother? There are no equity capital markets for the first quarter.
That's funny you mention equity capital markets, because Bob Pisani, you cover those pretty closely, particularly when it comes, of course, to new issues, which have been far and few between so far this year. Let's get over to Bob right now, get a look at the broader market.
Hello, David. Hi, David. Yeah, it's been a horrible first quarter. Next week, I'll have something to say about what the IPO market's going to look like in the second quarter. People are pretty cautious right now. I'll be talking to people at the ETF conference next week in Miami Beach about that. Meantime, starting the week, kind of like ending the week, a little bit like we started it, with energy still in control. You're tired of seeing energy as the leader or metals, XME. That little ETF has attracted enormous amounts of inflow in the last few months. Banks are showing a little bit better performance today, but they've been awful generally on the week. Consumer staples have held up really well, defensive sectors, and those semis are not looking good. The SMH is not far from a 52-week low, believe it or not. I've been saying all week that the stock market is acting like we're in a late cycle stage of the economy. What does that mean? Well, that's the stage prior to a recession. So you're selling off this defensive sectors dramatically. We've been talking about the transports all week. It's the number one topic. They're down 6%. Semis are down 5%. Banks are down almost 5%. The home builders 4%. There's a lot of new lows in the home builders yesterday. And industrials are down 2%. This is what late cycle stock market looks like. You sell off the defensive. Now, I know Jim and David were talking about Bank of America's downgrade of the transports. And yes, we're seeing those transport stock down again today. Thanks for the notice. A little bit late, guys. We've been noting all week that the transports were at 52-week lows. The market has sussed this out a long, long time ago. So the new low list was a lot of transportation stocks this week. Mr. Hexter over at Bank of America said prices declining rapidly, capacities available. These shifts could signal a downturn in the economy and lower demand. Would have been nice to hear that a few weeks ago. It's buy low, sell high. But nonetheless, there you got your downgrade, and we'll pay attention to that. In the meantime, what else is late cycle behavior? You hold on to defensive stocks and you hold on to commodity stocks. So look what's going on this week. Healthcare is up 3%. Consumer staples up 3%. Utilities are up 2%. REITs up 1%. There you go. Defensive, interest rate sensitive, commodity stocks like energy and metals doing well. Again, that's all late cycle behavior for the stock market. If you take a look at the new highs this week, well, it's littered with basic, you know, defensive names and utilities all over the place. So we got Walmart at a new high. You've got Hershey's. You've got Duke. There's a whole pile of various utilities at 52-week highs. Again, late cycle behavior here, and the defensives are what's leading the market to at new highs. Meantime, in terms of earnings, it's still early, but I just want to point out WD-40, which is a real old stalwart and a favorite of the old school crowd like me. They had their earnings out. They were pretty good. But again, usual story about the challenging inflationary environment. They have a lot of significant commodity inputs here. They talked about significant gross margin deterioration. They make a lot of money, 55% gross margins, and they dropped to 50%. That's a lot. 500 basis point decline in the gross margins. And they said, look, we're trying to get it back. We're trying to raise prices, but they can't raise prices fast enough. And here, I think you're going to see a theme for the second quarter. So they reduced their net guidance a little bit to account for the fact that they can't increase the prices fast enough. David, you're going to see this a lot. This was, you know, WD-40 was one of the darlings of the pandemic. It shot up in 2020. But now I think it's leading the charge of what you're going to see in some of the guidance for earnings. David, back to you.
Yeah. Such great points, Bob. Yes. You know, figures into our discussion earlier as well about advertising spending to a certain extent, which sometimes can also fall victim when you're not able to make up margin the way you just described with WD-40. We'll see you later, Bob. Bob Pisani. Yeah,
Jim. So ConAgra's telling me we got to be let's say that our answers may not be perfect. They are saying to me they dialed back their fourth quarter A&P, their ads,
yes,
because of supply constraints on certain brands. So continuing to increase demand short term only makes that short term supply challenge worse.
So it's more about
they're
not
saying
having
that
stuff on the shelves,
right, which again is another whole issue
that you don't advertise for stuff that you
right
can't
so
sell.
So I just wanted to point that
no
out.
No, I'm glad you did.
No problem.
Glad you did. By the way, a reminder: you can get in on the CNBC Investing Club. Get updates like that from Jim. Sign up and find out more on CNBC.com/join the club or you can just point your phone at the QR code on the screen and it will take you right there. All right, let's get to a bond report before you We take a very quick break for you. Of course, Treasuries figure very prominently at this point, but we've seen, by the way, if you own a bond fund, we don't talk about that enough.
No, we sure don't.
Things are not going great.
No.
At all. Somebody this morning texted me, I'm down 11% of my bond portfolio in the last month.
You have to be short-term.
Why? Because of that. 10-year note, 2.713. We'll be right back. We're calling it MANA now, officially. Right? I like that.
Some.
Amazon, you know, that's consumer worries to a certain extent, and that continues there. Even though the strength of AWS may overshadow any weakness. Well,
no one made it. 40 years, nobody made it. They had manna from heaven, but didn't make it.
We're back after this. All right, just enough time for you to tell us what's on Mad Money tonight.
Constellation Brands, growth at a reasonable price. That's Modelo, and that's Corona, and much more. And I can't wait to speak to them. They're very, very good. Bill Newlands.
Yeah.
Very good.
Without a doubt. Still cannabis, too, right?
Well, I was going to say, we'll ask about Canopy. You have to ask about Canopy, which has not been good.
No.
Early.
All right, I'll see you Monday.
Yeah.
Have a relaxing weekend.
Michael Nidor.
Yeah.
It's okay.
All right.
You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older. Like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.